Thank you, Sungsik, for the kind introduction and for inviting me to give a talk here. It's great to be back virtually at PI again. And today I'm going to be talking about some recent work on pivot Hamiltonians. And this work is in collaboration with my advisor, Ashvin, and two postdocs in our group, Ryan Thorngren and Ruben Raisin. And that's based on these three papers. And so just to give a broad introduction to the work, let me just start by talking about a big picture on topological phases of matter. These are phases of matter that has attracted a lot of interest recently and also has a long history, starting from, for example, the fractional quantum Hall effect to realizations of, for example, quantum spin liquids. And also, there have been practical applications of topological phases of matter that people have been trying to use them for, example, quantum error correcting codes, for example, for toric code. And even more exotically, people have also been looking into phases of matter that have beyond topological properties that they might not be able to describe by topological quantum field theory, such as these fracton phases of matter. And of course, what I mean by distinct phases of matter is that suppose I have some knob where I can tune the parameters, where I can go between these phases. What I roughly mean is that I can, if I want to connect these two phases by some smooth parameter, I have to go through some phase transition. And sort of the question is what kind of phases there are and what are the key properties that we can use to distinguish these phases. Of course, we shouldn't forget that there is also the trivial phase, which doesn't have any characteristics. For example, we can describe it as having long range entanglement. But of course, that doesn't mean that it's not interesting. If I zoom in, and that'll be the focus of my talk today, I'm actually going to talk about trivial phases of matter. But as we will see, they'll be actually interesting if there is symmetry. So without symmetry, there's only one trivial phase of matter without symmetry. But we know that if I impose some symmetry group, for example, G, then there can actually be a wide variety of phases protected by this symmetry group G. One good class that we know about is the spontaneously broken phases, where we can sort of describe them by whether the Hamiltonian respects the symmetry group G, but the ground state sort of spontaneously breaks it. So for example, I can have a paramagnet phase in the trivial phase, but by symmetry breaking it, I can have a ferromagnetic phase where the ground state is pointing either all spin up or all spin down, and that spontaneously breaks the symmetry. And this we understand very well, and we know that we just need to, there are certain subgroups of the group G that are preserved. On the other hand, over maybe the last 10 or 15 years, people have come to know of a different type of phase, the symmetry protected topological phases. And they're a bit different from symmetry breaking phases because the ground state preserves the symmetry. Nevertheless, they cannot be connected to a trivial phase. That means if I want to tune it smoothly to the trivial phase, it turns out that there is a phase transition. So what characterizes these phases? Well, if you open it and look at it on the boundary, sometimes you find some boundary edge mode that is protected by the symmetry. Or there are also some diagnostics in the bulk, such as some non-local string order parameters that people can use to distinguish these phases. Now, in terms of classification, people also by now have a pretty good understanding. We sort of understand them by some formal classification using some group cohomology or some more advanced mathematics such as cobordism. But more or less, given a symmetry group G, people can tell you how many SPT phases there are. However, one interesting question is that although we understand symmetry broken phases and symmetry protected SPT phases pretty well, they seem to be sort of two different classifications of two different types of phases. So an interesting question that one might ask are symmetry broken phases and symmetry protected topological phases in any way related? A second interesting question is regarding phase transitions between these phases. For example, the transition between the trivial and symmetry broken phase, we understand pretty well by now. This is this Landau-Ginzburg paradigm, and we can sort of write an effective field theory that captures the critical point, and we can sort of study those systematically. So this we understand pretty well. Nevertheless, we sort of don't quite understand that well transitions between the trivial phase and the SVT phase. Or more interestingly, one can also ask what happens at the transitions between a symmetry broken phase or SVT phase, or transitions between two SVT phases. So of course, there have been quite some success in approaching these phases in one dimensions. So in a lot of these cases, when people study, for example, bosonic SPT phases in 1D, one can sort of do this Jordan-Wigner transformation to turn it into a free fermion problem, and one can then exactly solve it. So then in 1D, it's just that the fact that these 1D, one-dimensional bosonic SPT phases are secretly free fermions, and that allows us to make some progress. However, suppose we try to study bosonic SPTs in higher dimensions, we sort of run into some problems. For example, this recent work that studied a trivial to SPT transition in 2D found that there's actually an intermediate ferromagnetic phase if one just tries to linearly interpolate between trivial SPT. So this sort of, if we find an intermediate phase, or for example, perhaps a first order transition, then it becomes harder to make progress because we want to study what happens at, we want to study a continuous second order transition, for example, between trivial and SPT phases. So in higher dimensions, when there's no nice way to map it to a fermion problem or some other problem that we know how to solve exactly, it becomes hard to study these transitions. And there's a question of whether there's a systematic way of studying. So in this talk today, I'm going to introduce what we have been calling pivot Hamiltonians. And that sort of, this, as I will show, the pivot Hamiltonians give a nice framework to sort of answer both of these questions. So the first question was how symmetry breaking and SPT phases are related. And I will show that actually symmetry breaking and SPT phases are actually closely related by the fact that you can actually use one to generate entanglement for another phase. For example, I can start with a product state and evolve with a symmetry breaking Hamiltonian, and then arrive at a symmetry protected phase at the end of the day. Now I'll go walk through some examples right in a bit. And the second question is how to systematically study SVT phase transitions. And what I will show is that pivotal Hamiltonians in the first part, it not only generates entanglement, but it can also generate symmetries in the sense that suppose I take a trivial and SPT phase that's generated by some pivot Hamiltonian. That is, I evolved with some Hamiltonian to go from trivial to SPT. It turns out that at the midpoint, if I interpolate between trivial and SPT, it actually has a symmetry that is itself given by the pivot Hamiltonian. So that can become very useful if we want to study phase transitions where we know we have larger symmetries, and that can help sort of constrain what types of phase transitions can happen when we attempt to interpolate between trivial and SPT, and might also help us fine-tune to find continuous transitions. And I also mention, since trivial and SPT transitions are sort of unconventional transitions, I also make some connections, surprisingly, to other unconventional transitions, such as deconfined criticality, where people study in 2D quantum magnets. Okay, so just to give a very quick warm up of the examples I'm going to be talking about today, I'm just going to talk about the simplest example of this pivot Hamiltonian. And this example is the 1D cluster state. So I'm going to start with the spin chain with 2Z2 symmetries. And these Z2 symmetries are given by flipping the spins on either the odd or the even sites of my 1D chain. And there are two phases I can write down. One is the trivial paramagnet, which is where the ground state is all spins pointing to the right, and this respects the spin flip symmetry. And the second is the so-called 1D cluster state Hamiltonian, where my Hamiltonian is given by a product of ZXZ on the chain, and where these are Pauli operators. And you can notice that ZXZ on all the terms commute. So I can exactly, on a closed chain, there's exactly one ground state and one unique ground state on a closed manifold. However, if I open up the chain, it turns out that there are two, I get a ground state degeneracy of 4, and that comes from a degenerate edge mode, which cannot be lifted by breaking the symmetry. And so the reason is an SPT phase is because of this edge mode. One way to see it is an SPT phase is because of this edge mode. And because if I try to preserve the symmetry and tune it to the trivial paramagnet, I cannot lift this. And so I have to go through a phase transition if I want to remove this degeneracy while preserving the symmetry. Now, perhaps surprisingly, these two Hamiltonians are closely related. In fact, I can start with the trivial paramagnet and I can apply a certain unitary that when I conjugate the trivial Hamiltonian, gives me the SPT Hamiltonian. And surprisingly, this unitary is just generated by the Ising Hamiltonian. And so I've normalized the Ising in such a way that if I evolve this Ising Hamiltonian for an angle pi, it gives me the exact unitary that creates this cluster state. And for people that are in quantum info, this unitary is just known as the product of these controlled Z gates. So with this example in mind, let me now talk about the general idea I want to generalize from this example related to, and this idea we call pivoting. So what I want to start with is, let's say I start with two Hamiltonians. One is H naught, which is typically a G paramagnet. That's the trivial phase I mentioned earlier. And another Hamiltonian, which I call the pivot Hamiltonian, which is my Ising Hamiltonian in their previous slide. I'm going to evolve my Hamiltonian H naught with H pivot for some angle theta. And for the purposes of this talk, I'm going to choose theta such that if I evolve by pi, I get a non-trivial SPT, for example, the cluster state in the previous example. And another condition I want to impose is that if I evolve by 2 pi, then I should get back to the trivial phase. And sort of visually, I can sort of see like this. So suppose I have the trivial phase here, the SPT phase here, and I linearly interpolate between the two. So I have a line here that preserves the G symmetry. The action of the pivot Hamiltonian, what it's doing, it's just rotating out of the plane, out of the G symmetric plane, and connecting H naught to SPT smoothly through this path. And by violating the G symmetry, that is why we are able to connect H naught and HSPT. And so the pivot Hamiltonian sort of acts like this compass picture where its action does the rotation around this circle. Okay. So with the general idea in mind, the outline of my talk is the following. So in part one, I'm going to talk about creating SPT models. And that goes under the theme of pivots generate entanglement. And that goes along the lines of rotating around this figure, where I start from trivial phase and generate entanglement along this path to create HSPT. And in part two, I'm going to talk about critical points between SPT phases. So that'll be along this path. And so if I interpolate between trivial and SPT while preserving the symmetry, I'll go through a phase transition. And I'll talk about the symmetry where that the pivot Hamiltonians generate at this exact midpoint. So before I move on, let me just pause in case there are any questions. Okay, if not, then let me move on. So let me start by, yes.
So in general, what is there a guarantee that this pivot Hamiltonian can be local?
All right, so as I mentioned, this Hamiltonian is the Ising Hamiltonian. So it is local, but actually the symmetry it generates will not be an on-site symmetry, as I'll get into. Not sure if that addresses your question.
I guess in more general context, is there some intract, say, suppose this we try to do it for intracting theories. Do we know that there is the local pivot Hamiltonian that achieves the same goal?
Here the example is already for boson, so it's already interacting. But I guess later on I'll talk about other examples on how do we know that this pivot Hamiltonian works, and like what are the criteria and what sort of mileage we can get out of this idea, I guess. Yeah. Okay. So let me start with part one. So I'm going to create SPT models by evolving a state with the pivot Hamiltonian. And briefly, I'm going to talk about this pi rotation I mentioned, which can sort of act as an entangler that creates the SPT phases. And I will show that this allows us to create SPT phases and also relate many known examples of symmetry breaking and SPT phases together via network of lattice dualities. And furthermore, I'm going to talk about 2-pi rotation, which you might think is boring because it just goes back to the trivial phase. But it turns out that it can also do something non-trivial if you have a boundary. And this is related to the idea of quantum pumps. And I'm going to just flash an interesting application relating to measurement-based quantum computation. Okay, so let's begin here. So let's go back to the example of the trivial paramagnet and the Ising Hamiltonian that I mentioned. So as I said, using the pivot Hamiltonian to rotate trivial, we can create this SPT, the cluster state Hamiltonian. But we don't need to stop there. Of course, we can use these two Hamiltonians as pivots themselves. For example, if I evolve SPT by the trivial Hamiltonian for an angle pi, it turns out that I can create another SPT given by these stabilizers y, x, y. And furthermore, let's say I evolve the trivial Hamiltonian with the SPT Hamiltonian, then I create a third SPT phase. And it turns out that these are different SPT phases if I under this symmetry. For example, if I have a global spin flip and a time reversal, which acts as complex conjugation, then it turns out that these are distinct SPTs. And for one-dimensional SPTs, we know that these are characterized by projective representations on the 1D boundary. And sort of these give different projective representations, which means that there are distinct SPTs. Of course, one can also wonder, I have a symmetry breaking phase given by this pivot Hamiltonian. I can also evolve the symmetry breaking phase by the trivial Hamiltonian. That gives me a different symmetry breaking phase. And I can also go the other way, and that gives me a third symmetry breaking phase. And so these are distinct symmetry breaking phase. For example, this Ising Hamiltonian only breaks the Z2 but preserves time reversal, while this Hamiltonian breaks both of these Z2s but preserves the diagonal symmetry. And lastly, let me just mention that along this sort of 1D lattice of models, you can apply the Cramer's one-way duality, which sort of just reflects this figure. And for example, the trivial phase becomes the symmetry breaking phase. And it turns out that all these models I've written are mapped into each other under the Cramer's wanted duality. Furthermore, one can also show that the pivot acts as a reflection around this line, in the sense that, as I've told you, the Ising Hamiltonian evolving by the Ising Hamiltonian maps this trivial Hamiltonian to SPT, but it will also map the symmetry breaking phase, this symmetry breaking phase, and this SPT to this SPT. So all these models in this 1D line are related by evolving with a Hamiltonian, and the action is given by reflection along this line. So it's interesting to note this network of dualities, that suppose I just started with the trivial Hamiltonian, suppose I know I have Cramer's Wanne under my belt, and I know this technique of pivoting, just these three ingredients is enough to generate this whole sequence of models. Okay, so of course, this example is in one dimension. A natural question is, how do I generalize this to higher dimensions? Is there a similar...
Can I ask a question before you go to higher D? Mm-hmm. So for the previous figure, so in this figures, how important is it that these models you write down are all integrable? So let's say if I deviate a little bit from the integral point, I mean, they are still SSB, they are still SPT, but do this technique still apply?
Right. So of course I can, let's see. Well, I guess I was gonna say you can interpolate between X and ZXZ, but I guess that's still integrable, because everything here is secretly free fermion, so everything here is all integrable. But well, in higher dimensions, we don't know that's the case, but.
Okay, so the higher dimensional models you'll be talking about, are they still integrable?
They're not integrable, yeah. And so even in some cases, I have to use numerics to see what phases they're in and the phase diagram, which I'll get to in part 2. Yeah.
Okay, thanks.
Nat, can I ask a question?
Mm-hmm.
Even in this example, you can have very complicated Hamiltonian for the same SPT, right? And
Yes. There's an infinite line of this that keeps going out.
Do you mean if you have a very complicated Hamiltonian, this procedure still works? If H naught is not X, it's X plus, say, XX plus XXX, and so on.
Oh, so actually one criteria I need this for this to work is that, let me go back, I need this 2π rotation to be zero. So in some sense, gives some constraints on the Hamiltonians I can play around with. In particular, I wanted to have sort of integer spectrum, so that when I evolve it by 2π, I only get like 2π integer, so that I can get so that this becomes sort of a circle when I evolve. Otherwise, it'll just keep on going and I won't come back to myself.
Uh-huh. So for a given phase, there exists some Hamiltonians such that by this definition, it doesn't work.
Yeah. So, right. So you want some certain fixed point phase to do this pivot, but the stuff being pivoted can be anything within the phase. So H naught can be anything in the trivial phase, but the pivot I choose to be needs to be nice. And so when I do this, all of them are sort of nice because I want to further pivot them around each other.
But do we know such a pivot always exists?
Oh, well. That's what I was talking about next. How do we do so in higher dimensions?
Mm-hmm. Also, I'm a bit confused about the role of symmetries here. So previously you were talking about Z2 cross Z2 symmetry. Now it's Z2 cross
T. Right.
So what? What's the procedure exactly?
Right. Okay. So I was gonna sweep that under the rug, but since you mentioned it, so So both of these symmetries work. I'm just focusing on this symmetry because it's easiest to explain the projective representations. Of course, you can talk about, for example, if I use the ZZ, it doesn't respect the Z2 times Z2 symmetry. So if I want to treat this as a phase, it's easiest to use this example to treat Ising as a symmetric phase. But of course, the pivot can sort of break the symmetry you impose, and that's the reason it can connect between trivial and SVT.
So what's the importance of integer spectrum? Why do you need it?
That's just because I want it to come back to itself. So I want this 2π rotation. So it gives me like a U1. Later on, it'll be give me a U1 symmetry rather than a R symmetry that keeps going.
Right, but in principle, you could pivot. You could use some Hamiltonian that doesn't have integer spectrum and still achieve the same thing. Is this right?
Yes. Well, yeah. In principle, that works. But well, of course, you won't come back to yourself. And then, for example, this SVT, they all have order 2, and that's sort of because by rotating pi, you get to the SVT. You rotate 2 pi, come back to itself.
Can I ask just general point, like what is the relevance of this pivot Hamiltonian? Like it seems like you're saying, well, you have a bunch of SPT phases and there's some dualities between them. Mm-hmm. Is it important that there's a particular Hamiltonian that generates this duality? Or, I mean, that's what you're calling the pivot, right? Is that a key
criteria? Right. Is the question what makes this pivot a pivot? I mean, what makes the Ising?
Well, why do we care that it's a pivot? Maybe like there's a duality between X and Z XE. Okay, that's great. Mm-hmm. But like, why do we care that HSSB is specifically generating that duality? Is that?
Oh, right. So of course here is just some. At this point, it could be treated as some fun relations if you want. But later it'll become very important when I talk about criticality in particular. If I write down X plus ZXZ, there's actually a U1 symmetry generated by pivot. So that will become important later. Yeah.
I see. Thank you.
I just want to make sure what the statement here really is. So is the following correct? Suppose I have a symmetry G, and suppose the SPTs under this symmetry G are classified by some Z2 to some power. Let's say it's just a Z2, then I just take a representative Hamiltonian of the trivial phase, any representative Hamiltonian of the trivial phase. Do you mean there always exists a local pivot Hamiltonian that satisfies your previous definition?
Well, I can just take Ising and I can take any, so I can evolve that trivial Hamiltonian, any Hamiltonian in the trivial phase by Ising, and then I'll get the SPT. Some point in the SPT.
So this, even the symmetry group doesn't matter? This works for any symmetry group G?
Oh, well, so, okay. So let's say for abelian for now. So for abelian, you can write, for Zn, for example, you can write something similar. And this will be similar to like the clock or Potts model, for example.
I mean, for any group cohomology SPT, there's always dualities between them. And presumably, these dualities can be generated by a Hamiltonian. Mm-hmm. So in that sense, it just should be that. Very general.
Right. So you can do that, although whether it's related to some nice Hamiltonian is not obvious, right? For example, of course, you can always write down this unitary. But when you take the log to get the Hamiltonian, it might be some ugly thing. Here, I guess I'm pointing out that it's actually something familiar, which is the Ising model or the Potts model for the end.
But is it guaranteed that such a pivot Hamiltonian can be made local?
Right. So there is I guess we have a recipe for creating these symmetry creating these pivot Hamiltonians. So actually, that will be related to the next slide, but
Can I ask a very quick question? So this can be done for Z3 as well?
For Z3, it'll be like something similar to the POTS model.
Yeah, but so actually you can do like a 2π rotation, pi rotation. This can be done on Z3.
Yes.
Okay, that's it.
Okay. That's okay. Let me just move on a bit since I think I'm a bit behind now. So for example, going up into two dimensions, it turns out that if I have a 1D SPT, let me just stick to order two right now. So some G SPT, we can actually construct a pivot that does the job in higher dimensions. And this is related to this idea of decorated domain walls, if you're familiar with this. But the basic idea is that whatever I use for my 1D pivot, I just need to slap on another Z. And for example, so starting with this 1D cluster state protected by two Z2s, I can now write a 2D SPT protected by three Z2s. And so the pivot in 2D is given by taking this Ising Hamiltonian and then just slapping another Z. So for example, in this lattice, you can take, say, the triangular lattice or this union jack lattice, and I have three Z2s where I flip I flip each of the three colors, the spins on each of the three colors. And sort of by evolving with this three body Hamiltonian, and I sort of this sign here is sort of important to get the correct phase. But we can show that by evolving with this sort of non-trivial pivot Hamiltonian, you can get a non-trivial SPT. And in fact, this example was pointed out by Benny in this paper, that evolving this Hamiltonian by pi actually creates this SPT. But of course, you can bootstrap up yourself in dimensions, and then you can consider higher dimensions where sort of this similar pivot Hamiltonian, where I have like four Zs now also works. So that's one way to move yourself up in dimensions to get to construct new SPT Hamiltonians. Okay, so let me just mention a fun application related to pivots, which is related to this 2π rotation. So as I mentioned, the 2π rotation actually sort of does nothing. It creates, it goes back to the trivial SPT. And one way to see it is if I took this Ising Hamiltonian and I rotated by 2π, I get a product of Ising terms, which is just one. However, if I'm on an open chain, these terms will actually not cancel on the endpoints, and it will sort of get Z on the left side and Z on the right side. And because this the symmetry is a prod X, which is a Z2 spin flip, this each Z is actually an odd charge under the symmetry. So what it's doing is that it's changing the charge of the two endpoints. And so you can think of it as pumping an odd charge from one end to the other. So this is sort of like a Z2 version of the Dallas charge pump. Of course, you can generalize this to higher dimensions. And sort of this has been studied in the context of Floquet SPT phases. And the idea is that you can start with a product state and you evolve for some time. After some time, nothing happens in the bulk, but on the boundary, it can create some entanglement. And so for example, in 2D, one can create a 1D cluster state on the boundary using the 2D pivot I just mentioned. And one nice application is that people want to prepare cluster states to use them for measurement-based quantum computation. And it turns out that So you might ask, well, I just told you how to prepare the cluster state using the Ising Hamiltonian with pi evolution. But it turns out that if I just miss pi by a small angle, I'm not guaranteed to prepare a symmetric an SPT phase. And it turns out that having the cluster state or having some state in the SPT phase is very important for is very useful for doing some measurement-based protocol. So unlike the 1D preparation, it turns out that if I sort of pump this 1D SPT from the bulk onto the boundary, this is actually a more robust preparation. And as long as, even though I miss by 2 pi by a bit, it turns out that as long as I preserve the symmetry, the state I prepare on the boundary will still be some state in the same SPT phase as the 1D cluster states, which then can be used for measurement-based quantum computation. So let me just flash a fun example where I can prepare a 2D cluster state by sort of pumping this by driving with this pivot Hamiltonian, which is a product of 4 Zs in the bulk. So for each tetrahedron on an FCC lattice, for example, this one, so given by one of the vertex and 3 of these face centers, I evolve with this 4-body pivot Hamiltonian Z, 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 Z. And after a 2 pi evolution, it turns out that nothing happens in the bulk, but I create this entanglement in the boundary in the shape of the 2D cluster state. And this 2D cluster state preserves the pivot Hamiltonian itself preserves subsystem symmetries in the sense that I can flip all the spins in this individual plane. And after the evolution, I created a 2D cluster state, which is a non-trivial SPT protected by flipping these 1D line symmetries, which terminate from the planar symmetry on the boundary. Okay. So let me pause again in case there are any questions about part one before I move on to part two.
I'm still not sure what the statement is in part one. In particular, how general it is. So is the following correct? If I have a symmetry group G and I consider and suppose the SPTs are order two, then then you know a well-defined procedure to find out the pivot Hamiltonian.
Yes. So okay. So you can always find some Hamiltonian that does the job. However, what I'm going to talk about next in the second part is there are certain Hamiltonians that have a extra property such that when I interpolate between trivial and SPT, I'll get a U1 symmetry.
What about locality? Is it guaranteed? I understand you can always find a unitary to connect these two places. In terms of a Hamiltonian,
Right, the unitary is, well, if you think of group cohomology phases, this unitary is, you can sort of take the log and then the Hamiltonian is sort of local.
I see.
Everything is diagonal and local, it's sort of as locally assigned phases. So yes, you can do that, but yeah, whether it is useful for SPT criticality will be another question.
So this even applies to SO3 symmetric SPT?
Well, there I don't even know a unitary that creates, for example, the Haldane chain or the AKLT, because it's sort of not like a fixed point in some sense. It doesn't have zero correlation length.
So to which phases does this work?
So right. So if I have a model with sort of zero correlation length, then I know how to create one. But yeah.
Okay. Thanks.
I'm also a bit confused. So for group cohomology models, nice and clean models, we have these these phases, and then it's all diagonal. And then you're saying this preparation circuit can be designed so that it squares to identity?
Oh, sorry. I'm just talking about Z2 phases, but of Z2. Course,
okay.
For so order n phases, it would be some other angle, like 2 pi over n.
Okay.
Okay. So let me move.
Sorry, can I ask a quick question? I'm not really familiar with this SPT phase. So I'm wondering, but isn't that by definition that, say, you have finer finite circuit that basically connect the trivial phase to the SPT, but they have to break the symmetry. Mm-hmm. Then, as you said, that wouldn't just take log of that. That's just the modular Hamiltonian. Isn't that just the pivot matrix? Then what's the special thing about the pivot matrix again?
Right. Which is the thing I'll get to, because when you take the log, there's a freedom of stuff that you can add that is trivial mod to pi, right? So you can, that's anything you can add. But there are certain Hamiltonians that have a nice property related to transitions, is that when you interpolate, linearly interpolate, that pivot Hamiltonian acts as a continuous symmetry at this midpoint.
I think the question is that, I think it's much more simpler. I think the question is like, we can create it easily, and then, so is it trivial? Then I think the answer is the encoding preparation circuit is not symmetric, right? Is it? I thought that—
Yeah, it breaks the symmetry, yes.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you. Okay, so let me move on to the second part related to SPT criticality. And as I said, this pivot Hamiltonian, there are certain nice pivot Hamiltonians where we actually generate a U1 symmetry at the midpoint of the interpolation. And I will show that this can be related by connecting SPT transitions to surprisingly deconfined quantum critical points. Okay, so I probably mentioned this even before I got to this slide, but let's take the trivial and SPT and add them together. And this is the midway point of the interpolation. And naturally, this pi rotation gives you a Z2 symmetry because it swaps H0 and HSPT. So this pivot Hamiltonian is in the pi evolution of this pivot Hamiltonian is a Z2 symmetry exactly at this midpoint. But in some cases, it can be enlarged to a full U1 symmetry. And what that means is that in addition to H0 plus HSPT commuting with this pi rotation, it actually commutes with the pivot Hamiltonian itself. And so that gives you a larger symmetry. And this could be very useful because what happens, since this U1 is generated by some Hamiltonian, it's sort of not on site. And furthermore, it's impossible to find a basis for which this U1 and G both act on site. And sort of the way to see it is that if you could both make this U1 and G on site, then by evolving with this U1 for angle pi, you wouldn't create an entanglement. So you wouldn't have an SPT in the first place. So if you had an SPT, that means that the U1 and G cannot be both made on site. And sort of that's the notion of having a mutual anomaly between the groups U1 and G. And this mutual anomaly will turn out to be very important because when we study SPT transitions, an anomaly means that we cannot have a trivially gapped phase. And so, for example, if you have this anomalous symmetry, you either have to break U1 or break G, if both of them are restored, then that has to be gapless, and that would be very helpful for us to tune to a continuous phase transition. But before we get to that,
yes, correct me if I'm wrong. So by this definition, H pivot must not commute with G, right?
So U1 will be a semi-direct with G.
Uh huh. Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. Thanks.
Okay, so just to go back to the simplest example, which also turns out to be the case. So the Ising Hamiltonian connects trivial to SPT. And it turns out that in addition to having a Z2 symmetry, this Ising Hamiltonian actually commutes with H0 plus HSPT. And that has been pointed out before, for example, in this paper by Levin Gu, where they sort of say that this H0 and HSPT has some sort of conservation of domain wall number, where this Ising is sort of measuring the number of domain walls. But so another way to see it is that actually H0 plus HSPT is actually a transition as described by a compact boson CFT. And this pivot Hamiltonian, the Ising Hamiltonian, is actually this U1 of the compact boson CFT. And an easy way to see it is actually to use this Kramer's Wannier duality. And so to remind, this Kramer's Wannier duality is just swapping trivial with pivot. It's swapping X with ZZ. But here, let me do a extra swapping of X and ZZ. So what happens is the trivial Hamiltonian X gets mapped to ZZ, and let me relabel that as XX. And the pivot Hamiltonian, ZZ, is mapped to X, and let me redenote that as Z. And the SPT turns out to map to YY. So what after the Cramer's one duality, you find that H0 plus HB SPT, I denote this with tildes for the dual one, is actually just the XY chain secretly. And the pivot is just a number conservation, or sort of like a boson number for this XY chain. So we can see that in this language, trivial and SPT really is just compact boson CFT. And the pivot Hamiltonian is acting as the U1 symmetry. Now, recall that I talked about this 2D pivot Hamiltonian, where this pivot Hamiltonian given by this three-body Ising term generates a Z2 cube SPT. And remarkably, this pivot Hamiltonian, it turns out that it also commutes with H0 plus HSPT in this case. So it's a non-trivial calculation to check, but you can actually show that they commute. So this begs the question of how general is this?
Wait, is it?
Yes.
I very real, but is it real? I can't immediately see it. So is there any intuition?
Right. I will later show you why it's the case, but okay, maybe.
Thanks.
Let me leave it as a surprise for now, I guess. let's see. I think I'm a bit low on time. So it turns out that one can actually write down a criterion where the pivot Hamiltonian will actually commute with H0 and HSPT. And sort of, let me just sort of flash that quickly here. So suppose I have a trivial Hamiltonian and I have a pivot Hamiltonian, which is a sum of some Ising terms. It turns out that suppose I count the number of times that each vertex is contained in an Ising term. For example, in the Ising model, there are two Ising terms for this vertex. So this k is equal to 2 here. This pivot Hamiltonian has a normalization factor, 1 over 2tn, which ensures that the 2π rotation is trivial. And so, for example, in this 1D Ising case, this number is 4. It turns out that if k is less than 2 to the n, one can show that this pivot Hamiltonian always commutes with H0 plus HSPT. So that's the case for the 1D Ising chain. And this turns out to also be the case for the triangular lattice, where I have three body Z, and the vertex touches 6 triangle, so I have k equals 6. And this normalization is just 1 over 8. So this 2 to the n is just how many Zs I have. And I have 3 Zs here, so this is 1 to the 8. And it turns out that 6 is less than 8, so we have a U1 symmetry here. In contrast, on this Union Jack lattice, it turns out that there are 8 triangles touching this vertex, so k equals 8, and it turns out that there's no U1. So it turns out to be quite a geometric constraint. But later, I'll show you another way to see this, why this triangular lattice, you have a U1 symmetry. Okay. What I'm going to use this for is to study critical points between SPT phases. So like I mentioned, suppose I want to study trivial to SPT, I merely just interpolate it. What can happen is that I might possibly run into a first order transition, and or I might even run into an intermediate phase. But the nice thing of this anomaly, which is this U1 pivot times G, which is my symmetry group, which happens right at this midpoint, is that it constrains what can happen. For example, this first order can be considered as the U1 symmetry breaking, or this intermediate phase can be possibly interpreted as a G symmetry breaking. And so by adding extra parameters to tune along this anomaly, we can actually fine tune and we can sort of possibly find a multiple critical point between trivial and SPT. And so the case study I'm going to do is this example, where I have trivial and the Z2 cube SPT on the triangular lattice. So it turns out that people have studied, these folks have studied a direct interpolation between trivial and SPT, where it was found that and there is an intermediate ferromagnetic phase when you interpolate between the two. And this was studied numerically. So in order to find a direct transition, we consider adding an extra anti-ferromagnetic Ising coupling between the three between each sublattice, for example, ZZ connecting the blue, the red, green, and blue separately, in order to suppress this ferromagnetic order. And note that this Ising is diagonal, so it commutes with a pivot symmetry, this three-body Ising. And so this is the Hamiltonian we study. And this Ising coupling actually allows us to use efficient quantum Monte Carlo algorithms, such as non-local cluster updates. And so we can use this to efficiently map out the phase diagram. And so this is the study I mentioned. And to compare it to our results, this is the 2D phase diagram we obtained by adding this extra axis given by J. So it turns out that this ferromagnetic phase that people found, these previous folks found as an intermediate phase, is actually just one part of a large ferromagnetic phase. So if we note that if J is negative infinity, and I am dominated by a ferromagnetic Ising term, then I will just be in the ferromagnetic phase. And so one can find that there's actually a large ferromagnetic phase. And then by tuning J upward, we suppress this ferromagnetic order. And we claim that at the point where this ferromagnetic phase vanishes, there is a multicritical point connecting trivial to SPT. And we argue in favor that it's related to the deconfined quantum critical point that people study in 2D. Sorry, is there a question?
Sorry, what is beyond the DQCP multicritical point?
Oh, yes. So this beyond the, this is a U1 superfluid where the pivot symmetry is spontaneously broken. And in the next slide, I'll sort of make the analogy with the DQCP.
I see. I understand that alpha equal to 0.5 mm-hmm. that commutes with the pivot.
Yeah, so this whole line here.
J term also commute with the pivot.
Oh, right. So G is here, the whole plane here has G. And only this line at alpha is equal to 0.5 has the U1. But they're both there.
Okay.
And here G is spontaneously broken, which is the ferromagnet. And here U is spontaneously broken.
I see. Okay.
So to make the connection to DQCP, let me just give a quick recap. So what people usually study for DQCP is on a square lattice with 2D, a quantum max in 2D, you can study, there's either the nail phase, which breaks SO3 symmetry, or the VBS phase, where spins a pair up into singlets. And this sort of breaks the C4 rotation, where you can have the singlets paired up in four of the ways that are not equivalent by rotation. And sort of the C4 rotation at the DQCP, if I try to connect the two, I go through a phase transition. And because there's an anomaly, you cannot break one at a time. And so you have to go through a critical point, which is described by the DQCP. And at this DQCP, the C4 is actually enlarged to a larger symmetry U1. So actually, to relate it to our phase diagram, we actually note that there's a second axis you can actually add, where you can sort of deform the lattice so that in this dimerized phase, it prefers the dimerization in the x-axis, for example. Let's say I squeeze the lattice, then it prefers only one of these two dimerizations. And of course, the C4 rotation symmetry is now broken down to C2, but there are two distinct phases, and sort of you can think of it similar to an SSH chain, that there are two dimerizations, and I can label one as the trivial phase and one as the SPT phase. And to make the analogy clear, I've added this compass figure to show that actually you have like a larger symmetry, which is C4 or U1 here at this line. But by breaking it to the left or the right, you've broken the C4 rotation down to C2. And there are two choices of phases given by two dimerizations, which you can think of one as trivial or SPT. So now please don't blink as I sort of rotate this figure to sort of match the phase diagram I've just drawn. So the analogy is the following. So the nail phase here is just like the symmetry breaking, the ferromagnetic phase in the phase diagram, where instead of Z2Q to compare with the nail phase, I can sort of realize it as a larger group SO3 in the nail story. Whereas, so to compare, I have Z2Q, which will be enlarged to SO3 at the critical point. And furthermore, here I have an exact U1, where in the nail VBS case, it was C4 rotation, which gets enlarged to U1. And it turns out that the mutual anomaly in the nail VBS case between SO3 and the C4 rotation is exactly the same mutual anomaly between Z2 cube and this U1 here. And furthermore, this two dimerization sort of is exactly what I was talking about. By perturbing on the U1 symmetry breaking side, you can perturb to a smaller group where you have only trivial phase or SPT phase. So this is sort of the connection to DQCP. The usual nail VBS is sort of this line here. And there is a further perturbation which breaks the U1 to the left or the right. So we sort of, yes.
Yeah. Is Z2C something that flips the all three components of a nail order parameter?
Right, the Z2C is the part that semi-directs with the U1. So it's like the charge conjugation operator of the U1.
It's the charge conjugation operator of the U1. Okay. Mm-hmm. I see.
Yeah. And so this Z2Q, one of them will be the diagonal one, would be the Z2C. And then there are two other Z2s, which can be thought of as like the pi rotations of SO3. Okay. So this was results from numerics. And then we argued that there are multiple sort of consistency checks that sort of ruled out. For example, we had multiple consistency checks in the paper that sort of rules out, for example, that there's probably not a region where both symmetries are broken, for example, and that we rule out a first order transitions. This sort of entails that it's related to the QCP where you have a continuous transition at this point. And this can serve as a continuous transition between trivial and SPT. Okay.
What do you mean by usual out? By numerics or what?
Oh, so for example, I'm not going to go through the details, for example, but this cusp, for example, sort of rules out a distinct transition where you break both where you have both symmetries broken as an intermediate phase, for example. Yeah, I would be happy to talk about it after.
Okay, thanks.
So before I finish the talk, let me just mention that, which might be related to Benny's question, is that one way to see why the pivot works in 1D, I mentioned that if I took trivial plus SPT, I can do a Cramer's one-year duality to relate to the XY model. And in that picture, the U1 was clear because it's just the XY model. It turns out that you can do the same thing here as well. So I can gauge a Z2 subgroup, a certain Z2 square subgroup of the triangular lattice, which sort of flips two of the three spins. Turns out if I do that for the trivial code, in quantum information, it's popularly known as the color code topological order, which is equivalent to two toric codes. And now if I take this Z2 cube SPT and gauge this Z2 square subgroup, I get a color code enriched by the remaining Z2 symmetry. And now amazingly, there's a similar XY model you can write down. If I interpolate trivial to SPT, for example, it's just this point here, it turns out that it turns out to be a certain XY model on the honeycomb lattice, which is described by the following. If I take for each honeycomb, I can write down and my qubits live on the vertices, I can write down three sigma pluses and three sigma minuses. And I sum over all the configurations possible that I can place three sigma pluses and three sigma minuses on the hexagon. And this model, because it has three pluses and three minuses, commutes with the pivot symmetry, which is now just a sum of Z. And so one can probably also study numerics from this side, you can also study what the analog of this along this line, and you can drive it to a multi-critical point here using nearest neighbor Ising interactions. So in fact, it might be even better to study quantum Monte Carlo using this XY model, and there are sort of algorithms to study that, and which might allow us to go to very large system sizes and to compare, for example, whether critical point, critical exponents at this point are consistent with that of the DQCP. So let me just conclude with a few outlooks for possible future work. So I mentioned that these pivot Hamiltonians can be used to construct new SPTs using dualities, and it can be interesting sort of what the web of dualities that we can use to construct happens in higher dimensions. For example, in 1D, I showed that you have a lattice of 1D models, but in higher dimensions, it might not be in the same 1D place. So it's interesting what's the space of models you can get from pivoting and what's the total lattice look like. Secondly, for these cluster state pumps I mentioned, it might be interesting to look for experimental platforms that could realize this. And of course, people have already asked about this, but you can construct pivot Hamiltonians beyond order two phases. And even that is already, for example, for Z3 phases, you can have one trivial phase and you can rotate to two SPT phases. And then at the midpoint, which is the sum of the three phases, you can already have a multi-critical point with our enlarged U1 symmetry. So it would be interesting to study that as well. In the last slide, I mentioned realizing XY models to reach larger system sizes to extract critical exponents related to this DQCP. And of course, this pivot story can also allow us to explore possible higher dimension versions of the DQCP. And we have models written down for both global symmetry or possibly even subsystem symmetry. So that might be exciting for those who might want to find DQCP that are related to fracton phase transitions, for example. So just before I conclude, I just wanted to flash a quick slide on other topics that I'm interested, that I've been worked on. For example, I've worked on interacting fermionic SPT phases and how to construct lattice models out of them. I've also worked on topological and fracton orders where we actually construct lattice models where topological and fracton phases can actually coexist and have non-trivial fusion and braiding between the two between the topological and fracton sectors. I've also worked on the relation or tension actually between lattice Hamiltonians versus TQFT, where in some cases we find that the lattice Hamiltonian does not match up with the prediction given by topological quantum field theory. And also I've been interested in bosonization and dualities in lattice models, where starting from a fermion model, one can dualize it to a system of bosons, and that has interest in relation to anomalies. Also in quantum information can be related to realizing new stabilizer codes, and of course, in condensed matter, bosonization is an interesting topic. Okay, so let me just finish my talk and leave this slide up. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Matt, for very nice talk. Okay, Christian.
So how important was it that you have this U1 symmetry? Because the Z2 already has an anomaly, right?
Right. Anomaly. Yeah, that's a good point. So, right. So for example, in this, so the triangular lattice has a U1, but it turns out that this union jack model has a Z2. And the Z2 can also be interesting in its own right. For example, in this DQCP scenario, where you would have like this enlarged SO5 symmetry, we believe that in this, for this union jack case, because you only have a Z2, this should be in this case be a smaller symmetry, but it can still be this O4 DQCP. So it would be interesting to study numerics on this model and relate it to, for example, O4.
Yes. Can you go to the first diagram of the DQCP translation?
Yes. This one.
Yeah, so here, when you say it's a direct translation, do you mean if I keep the Z2 cubed symmetry and the U1 symmetry, then there's only one symmetric relevant perturbation?
Well, I mean, you can
check that.
Well, there are two, right? You can either tune this way to break into either side, or you can tune this way to break to trivial and SVT. So
I keep the U1 and the Z2 cubed symmetry.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. If you keep the U1, yeah.
Then there's only one relevant perturbation. That's the statement.
Mm-hmm. This is like tuning the mass term in the usual.
How did you check this?
Oh, well, of course, this is appealing to the field theory, right? It's not that we see from numerics. Of course, you can add other perturbations, which, for example, break the U1 down to Z2, for example, explicitly on the lattice.
I mean, are you saying you have a field theoretical formulation of this as well, and from that formulation, you can see there's only one symmetrically relevant perturbation?
Oh, no, well, so sorry. So when I mean field theory, we're just appealing to this usual, you know, NCCP1 model, where people have studied, right? That people have studied.
Yeah, but I'm asking in your case, do you know that, can you check there's only one symmetrically relevant perturbation independent of the numerics?
So maybe I wasn't clear. So the field theory we write for this particular, we don't have a field theory that for this particular sort of phase diagram. We're just appealing to the point that it has the same anomaly as QCP. So we just comparing with that field theory, right? So I'm not saying I have a continuum field theory with exactly U1 times G symmetry, which is so we were just comparing with that of the DQCP, and you can sort of match stuff. For example, this tuning is just tuning the mass, and then this perturbation here is tuning the monopole, which breaks the U1.
Help me understand here. So I guess just from that, the standard field theory description of that DQCP, and if you examine what happens if you break the SO3 down to all the Z2 subgroups and so on, you can pretty much already infer this phase diagram, right? So it's the new stuff here that you know how to write down the emergent U1 generators on the lattice?
Right, so this is like, yeah, a different sort of, I guess, UV realization where you have exactly U1 here, but you only have Z2 cube. Mm-hmm. And then this Z2 will be enlarged to SO3, for example. So actually, one way to see it is actually just suppose I don't have the SVT and I consider this transition here. So since there's no SVT, it's just three coupled Ising transitions over here. And once I add the SVT, you can sort of think of it as like some epsilon-epsilon perturbation in the Ising, and that'll flow to the O3. So this whole line here can be argued to be O3. And sort of, so that's related to this fact that, okay, the Z2 is enlarged to a larger continuous group.
I see. So, I guess I wanted to ask, can you do it with an explicit SO3? But you mentioned for SO3, you have trouble.
Right, actually, I would love if that were the case. Yeah, actually, but I don't know.
Speaking of that, even for the 1D holding chain, of course, if you work with spin 1 models, there's no, trivially integrable model. But if you realize it, the way you draw it here, except in 1D, right? You view holding chain versus trivial chain as just two dimerizations. There, obviously, you have two fixed point Hamiltonians. You just put S dot S on alternating bounds.
Yes.
And there we also know that if you equally superpose this two Hamiltonian, you get the you get the CFT, the transition between the two phases. So can you define a pivot Hamiltonian?
Yeah, the pivot there would be funny, right? Because it would be like a translation.
I see. So it cannot be a local unitary.
Right.
Okay. I see. So do you So do you have a criteria, some criteria, like I give you some, I don't know, randomly chosen symmetry and such that there's a Z2 classified SPT, and then you can tell me whether you can have a pivot Hamiltonian or it's going to look like a translation.
Yeah, not at the moment. So the best we have is related to this criterion where you have an enlarged U1 symmetry. But yeah, but that already assumes you have a unitary which generates a Z2.
Mm-hmm. I see. Okay. Thanks.
So I have a related question. So so in your example, those SPT Hamiltonian themselves are stabilizer Hamiltonian. And then they themselves can be used as a pivot Hamiltonian. And so in your example, all the representative Hamiltonians have integer spectrum, right? But and therefore they can generate U1. But in general, chaotic Hamiltonian is very unlikely to have integer spectrum, right? So, so in that case, what is the big picture? So do you have, but you want your pivot Hamiltonian to have integer spectrum always, is that right? To have a...
Yeah, in order to get a U1 so that it wraps around,
to get a U1.
You would want it to.
The target Hamiltonian doesn't have to have integer spectrum, is that right?
Right. So for example, this interpolation, I can start with somewhere here, which is not integer spectrum. As long as you're not using it to do the rotation, you're good. Just for the purpose of studying. So this U1, this pi rotation is really just flipping, reflecting this phase diagram.
So
any point here can be reflected using the pi rotation.
So using one of those representative Hamiltonian as a pivot Hamiltonian, that requires the existence of some Hamiltonian that has an integer spectrum within that phase. So do we know there exists such Hamiltonian?
Yeah, it's not clear, I guess. So I guess of course, it encourages further exploration, right? Because, personally, I find it remarkable that you start with trivial and Z2 SPT. And then somehow you, here you end up with the DQCP, which is SO5, which I find pretty mind-blowing. You're just starting with Z2 stuff. And somehow you get U1 for free and even more stuff in large here. So, but just from these little games you can play, you can already generalize this to higher dimensions, to Zn. So even just sticking with these stuff, I think there's already a lot to explore, both theoretically and numerically wise.
Okay, thank you.
I want to ask a question related to Jacob's question. I think I want to make sure that. So in the first part, because you are trying to connect a trivial SPT and a non-trivial SPT, both phases are short-range entangled. So there should be a local Hamiltonian evolution connecting them. So from this perspective, it's trivial to find such a Hamiltonian. And I guess is it correct that the non-trivial part is you require H2π, meaning applying the unitary twice, you come back to the original state? Is this the non-trivial part?
Actually, even before that, is it entirely clear that you can make the Hamiltonian time independent that way?
Oh yeah, I guess it's not clear.
It's not super obvious, but is it? Slightly.
Yeah, so here we choose it to be time independent. Well, given the unitary, I guess. I guess the general case is tricky, but at least for Zn, we know what will work in Zn, but for a general case, yeah, it's not clear what Hamiltonian you would use. For example, some non-abelian group, and let's say it's order 2, it's not clear what Hamiltonian will do the job.
Mm-hmm.
At least I don't know yet.
Mm. When you say Zn, do you mean that the symmetry is Zn cross Zn?
Yeah. So you can have Zn cross Zn, or Zn if it's n is even, you can have Zn times time reversal, for example.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And these are just like Zn generalizations of the cluster state. Yeah.
Okay. But as you said, for Dn, it's unclear whether this works.
Yeah. For general G, yeah. I don't know how that works. Yet.
Yeah, for Dn and Zn semi.
Dn. Oh yeah. Even that, I don't know yet.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thanks.
Yeah, Tarun, go ahead.
Thanks for the very nice talk. I had maybe just a couple of questions. One question I had was, is there a continuum way to see this relation? For example, the simplest example you gave of 1D. Suppose I have some field theory for the SPT base, which this is a nonlinear sigma model with some theta equal to 2π and other has theta equal to 0. And how do you see that evolving with the symmetry broken phase give you that theta term? Like a more coarse-grained way to see this equation between relating SPT to trivial using a symmetry broken phase in part integral, let's say.
Yeah, it's
so. Just to make sure I understand, you're saying it's related to tuning the theta term here, which breaks time reversal, and then at 0 at pi. Yeah, I don't know how to.
Because the relation you have is also holds for the partition functions, right? Because I can exponentiate H naught, and there's a relation between partition function also, not just Hamiltonian. So then partition functions I can write in imaginary time, part integral, and so on, and then I can ask whether it's a.
Right. Well, I guess from the field theory, you can, well, I guess by hand, you are just tuning theta. But I guess the question is here is on at the UV level on the lattice, how does one tune theta? Mm-hmm. Sorry, maybe I misunderstood your question.
I'm just trying to see why does this evolving with the, at a field theory level, why evolving with the symmetry broken phase by this angle gives you that?
Does the tuning, yeah. I don't have a good answer to that.
Mm-hmm.
And also it might, in general, it might not even be related to a sim. So, for example, in this 2D example I gave, related to this model by Benny, this pivot Hamiltonian, this three-body Ising, it has a minus one.
Right.
So it's like for up triangles you have plus, and down triangles you have minus. And it turns out this pivot is this Hamiltonian as itself is actually frustrated. So it's interesting that you evolve with a frustrated Hamiltonian to get an SVT phase.
Right.
Yeah. So the connection to me is very unclear. No, it's really also related to how do you relate symmetry breaking and SVT phases? That's a very interesting question.
Another question I had was about so there's this thing people introduce called strange correlator, which is that if I sandwich a let's say some 2-point operator between the SPT and the trivial, then I get power loss because it picks up dead states. So if I formulate that in your, I mean, if I use your relation, but relating the SPT and the trivial using the pivot Hamiltonian, then it seems to imply some interesting relation between the some correlation function, which only involve the symmetry broken phase and the trivial phase. I can write it down. I mean, I was writing down.
Right.
Figure out what it means. It seems it's a power law correlation function of operators related by this symmetry broken and trivial. Do you know what that is, or have you thought about it?
Yeah, no. Yeah, but that's a very interesting point. I didn't make the connection to the strange correlator. Yeah, that's definitely.
Yeah, I haven't understood it.
Thinking about.
Okay. Thank you.
Can I ask one more question, Nat? Can you go back to the 1D definition page?
Sure.
This one. So you said if you slightly perturb edge knot away from the exactly solvable model, the same edge pivot still works.
Yeah, let's say this is a linear interpolation, and let's say I'm here. Then the pi rotation will just bring me here. Let's say, for example. So it's just rotating. The action on this space of Hamiltonians is just the rotation.
What if it's some other term that's not either of this?
Yeah. Well, yeah, of course. I guess you can add, if the pivot respects G, of course, I guess you can add G itself. And that'll be invariant under the Hamiltonian. So that'll stay put.
What if I just...
But basically the point is that this pi evolution acts as an entangler from trivial to SPT. So whatever trivial state you start with, you evolve by this unitary, you will get a non-trivial SPT phase if it works for the fixed point.
Is this clear? How do I see it?
Because if it didn't, right? Because you know there's a path from trivial to SPT. So if it worked on this side, then it has to work on this side as well. You can just map this path here to the whatever path creates here by conjugating with the pi rotation. So you would get a continuous path connecting the two models on this side as well.
I'm not entirely sure what you mean. So you mean suppose I start from edge, now I consider edge prime
somewhere else here, and I know these are two are connected. So whatever connects these two, I evolve with the pi rotation, and that'll connect HSPT to the other guy, which.
Okay.
The fixed point SPT to the other SPT.
Yeah. Suppose I start from edge zero and I have edge zero prime. Then edge zero prime can maybe related to edge zero by some local unitary conjugation. And then now it seems I have a new pivot, which is the product of my unitary connecting edge zero and edge zero prime and this e to the I theta edge pivot. And then you want to argue this product can still be written as exponential of some local Hamiltonian?
Oh, no. I was just fixing H pivot. So I'm just saying, I was just answering your question about, is it clear that the pi evolution of H not prime, which is HSPT prime, is connected to HSVT?
Yeah, but.
But you're asking a different question now, which is, can you write down a different H pivot? Is that your question?
Not really. I'm still asking the same question, but to be honest, I don't know the answer. I know it seems you have answered, but I don't quite know the answer. What's the answer? I guess your answer is yes, but why?
Sorry, I'm not sure I understand your second question.
So suppose I start from H0 and I find out this H pivot. I add a generic local symmetric perturbation that keeps myself still in the same trivial phase. Is it correct that the same H pivot can still be used to do this, to bring me?
Well, generically, if I have some other, they are connected, but like your circuit might have tails, right? And that might be ugly. Like then your pivot might have tails and then I might not have this property anymore. So I don't know whether it works or not.
But it's a very special property that you have H2 pi is H0, right? It seems very hard to have that if you just have some generic perturbation.
Right, yeah.
So the applicability of this formalism really relies on not only just having an exactly solvable model, and you really want to apply it to the exactly solvable model?
Well, the pivot has to be nice, but you can apply to any point in the phase.
Yeah, this we're coming back to this point again. Sorry, I'm still a bit confused about this. So if I...
Like you have H not prime, I rotate by this pivot, which is the same one, I arrive at a different SPT prime. That's the claim. I will always get a non-trivial SPT.
Why is that?
Right, because there's a path connecting this. I just conjugate the path by pivot. I'm not adding them together. I'm conjugating the path by H pi rotation. So I get a different path on this side, which will connect HSVT to HSVT prime.
I guess that question might be that why there's no phase transition along the path, maybe.
Right, well, because this path is connected by a circuit, right? And there is no transition here.
Mm-hmm.
And here is just unitary, so here it should be smooth as well.
Which circuit are you talking about?
The one that connects H naught to H naught prime.
Yeah, that means let me denote the circuit by U. Then you replace H naught by U dagger H naught U in this equation.
Mm-hmm. Then, sure.
Then the right hand side is not obviously U dagger H theta U.
Let me just write something.
You require U to commute with E to the I theta H pivot.
So can I write here? No. Sorry. Seems I cannot write. I'm just saying that whatever unitary, let's say it's called U. So I have UH U dagger here as another point. And now let me call U prime over here as E to the I pi pivot U. E to the I pi pivot. So that's another U, right? And my claim is that connects HSVT and HSVT prime.
Yeah, why is that?
I guess if I make it more specific, I think your claim will be okay if E I theta H pivot U E minus I theta H pivot is also symmetric under G, right? Right.
And U is symmetric under G. The pi rotation is symmetric under G. So.
Okay, yeah, so that is a symmetric finite circuit, so.
Yes.
I see, so sorry, maybe I misunderstood from the very, very, very beginning. It's H pivot may not commute with G, but you require
you need the pi rotation to be symmetric. Okay. Otherwise, you won't create a symmetric SPT.
Yeah, okay.
But you're breaking G by getting out, yeah, but you restore G.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay. I guess maybe there's a simpler way to understand this just by looking at the wave function. So the wave functions are smoothly connected.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can talk. Yeah.
Oh, I'm still not sure.
Wave functions as well.
Sorry. I'm still not sure. So suppose I denote e to the I theta h pivot by v. Then this equation is saying h theta is equal to v dagger h naught v.
Yes.
Now I want to consider h zero prime, which is equal to u dagger h u.
Right.
And then it seems you want to tell me v dagger h zero prime v is still in the same place as v dagger
u
h zero v.
So this will be v h naught v, right? And this, and then this one will be v u h u v. Right, and v u, you just.
Yeah, that if you do that, you will obtain v u h u v. But I think I want to obtain u v h v u.
Well, I mean, you can just expand u as a circuit with symmetric terms, right? Let's see.
But how do I know they commute?
Let's see. No. Well, I just write VU as the conjugating U by V, right? And then I have an extra V inside, and that'll give me SPT. And the circuit is just, it's just VU V dagger, right? All right, I really hope I could write. I don't see an option.
Liu Jun, I think that's point is just that U and V may not commute, but their commutator is a finite depth symmetric circuit.
Yeah,
It doesn't matter.
Their commutator just is it?
So U is made of small stuff, and you conjugate it by V, you get other small stuff which is symmetric.
Okay. Okay. Thanks.
Okay. Okay, thank you everyone for the discussion. If there's no further question, let's thank Nat for that very nice talk.
Thanks, Nat.
Thank you.
It was fun.
You're welcome.
Thank you.